Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into the unknown realm with your hosts, Steve and Naomi from Stirs Paranormal. Take a journey with us into a world that few understand and even fewer dare to go. On your home for everything wicked, DTMWickedRadio.com.
This is the rocker, Keith Ramsey from Deep South Paranormal, and you're listening to Steve and Naomi on Into the Unknown Realm on DTM Wicked Radio.
Welcome into the unknown realm with Naomi and
Steve.
Thank you for joining us. I know it's kind of a crazy night with, you know, playoff games, the Bruins and the Canadians at the same time, but you can watch the game and mute it and listen to us at the same time. You can totally multitask. Don't you
think? I can.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We have in the chat room our silent Steve, who's gradually not being so silent, and make sure. Oh no, Eric is in the chat room.
It's not.
Should be a very.
It's gonna be a crazy night.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy. Hey, what about me, Eric? Anyways, we first want to say a little day late, but happy Mother's Day to all of our mothers out there who are listeners.
What's up, mothers?
And all, you know, of. You know, children or the mamas that have only little furry, you know, babies or, you know, the stepmoms or the moms that kind of aren't the moms but kind of the mom role models of all those kids that need a mom role
model. You're going crazy with the Happy Mother's Day stuff.
Well, I think
it's a good thing.
Yeah, people deserve recognition. We also want to say a happy birthday to our teammate, Brian Asbury. He is now at the legal age of retiring.
Happy birthday, Brian.
And then also we'd like to send prayers out to a neighboring town. There's something crazy going on there in Brentwood, New Hampshire.
Shootings,
bombings, fires, explosions. Not sure, and it's kind of odd because it's a very quiet town. And, of course, our best of luck to the Bruins tonight as they hopefully
close game six, right?
So, we have actually a really exciting night. We have one of our very new friends coming on tonight, and we had the pleasure of meeting her when we went down to Penhurst Asylum.
Sick place.
Yes, very sick place. And we got to investigate with her. She had this amazing mask on her face.
I sort of wish I had one.
Yeah, exactly. Keep all the yucky stuff out. But anyways, by day she's a comic artist and writer, but by night she's a paranormal author and paranormal investigator who works with teams across the Midwest of America. And who is this woman, a mystery?
It's me!
That worked amazing.
Kat, I think you should have, like, a cape.
I should.
And a rainbow cape because of all the different colors your hair is when, you know.
Oh, yes.
You know. And it's amazing because Kat looks totally different by each different color of hair. And you look good in every single color. I mean, we're talking, you know, from regular colors, from blonde, brown, red, and I think I've seen you with purple, and I think there was a pink in there, too.
Yeah, there's pink.
And so, you totally, I don't think I've seen you with black hair, though.
There was a point when I had very, very dark purple, and it looked black on my hair, on my head. And the reason why I can pull off all those hair colors is because I am as pale as a ghost, so everything looks good with me. But when I had the dark, dark purple hair, people thought, would come up to me, and they're like, what kind of Wicca do you practice?
Really?
And I'm like, I'm not a Wiccan. I'm Presbyterian. Thank you for asking. I'm going to load my groceries into the car right now and drive home. Because they would ask me at random places. In this particular case, it was the supermarket parking lot.
Wow. That's very bold
yeah.
for people to come up and kind of ask that.
So,
very bold.
People in Cincinnati are bold. What can I say?
You know, I have my daughter. She's half, of course, me, which is a mutt of six different things, and then half her father, which is Philippine, which mixes
mm-hmm.
her up to be one very unique-looking person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a store with her one day, and when we checked out, this lady says to me, she goes, oh, I think it's really great what you did. I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, what I do today? What was great? You know? And
yeah.
she's like, you know, adopting you, an Asian child, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
Oh.
I'm like, nope. She came out of me. I have the stars.
Oh, no.
She's like, oh, my God. She was mortified. I'm like, you know, I think that's great. You think that way, you know, appreciative of what
yeah.
people doing. But it was like, I think she was more embarrassed than I was, but.
Yeah, wow. I don't even know how to respond to that. holy moly, that's a really bold comment to make to somebody you don't know.
Right.
Anyway.
Speaking of Asian, you lived in Japan, right?
I did. I lived in Japan for 1 year, but I've been there. Oh, man, I've lost count. 5 or 6 times now. And I was a goodwill ambassador, too.
So is it arigato or arigato?
Arigato.
That means thank you, right?
Yes, it does.
See? I told you I know
some
Japanese.
He's like, I could say something in Japanese. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. And he says it. I'm like, do you know what it means? He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I can at the end, and I'm like, you better make sure you're pronouncing it right.
I used to always say
yeah.
domo arigato.
Yeah, domo arigato. Well, domo arigato gozaimasu is like thank you very much, but that's super formal, so
that was
you don't
in my...
hear it too often.
I studied a Japanese style of karate back in high school.
Okay.
That's all I got, though.
So you can speak
okay.
it very fluently?
It gets you around.
Yeah.
At least I'm proper.
You're proper. There you go.
There you go.
So,
yeah.
All right.
So, Kat, you can speak it fluently?
Yes, I can. I work as a translator, but I do teach beginner Japanese here in Cincinnati, not as a teacher, but people will come to me kind of as a casual thing. We do, to explain it further, there's the Japan America Society here in Cincinnati, and I help run the Young Professionals Conversation Table. And what we do is introduce Japanese who have come to America to work for Toyota here in Cincinnati, or Honda, or Mitsubishi, whatever company, or their suppliers. And they want to speak more fluent English. So what we do is integrate them with native English speakers. And I run the Japanese table, which is usually students or young professionals who want to increase their Japanese and speak it more naturally, because how we learn it sometimes via the textbook isn't as fluid as
right.
it's very blocky how they can put sentences together. So what I do, since I used to live over there and have over 15 years of language experience, I actually just kind of teach them how to put the sentences together, make them sound correct and sound natural. Because like English, you can actually correctly have correct grammar, but it will still come out robotic. So my job is to kind of teach them conversational Japanese.
Okay, so I would love to hear you say something like, this is Kat Klopo. Listening to Steve and Naomi Into the Unknown
okay.
Realm. Okay.
Well, first off, I can see boats here in the chat room says, "Watashi wa otoko desu," which means I am a man. Good. Boats, I'm glad to hear that you're a man. Yeah. But for the radio thing, let's see. Konbanwa minasan, watashi wa katsukoko to moshimasu. Dozo yoshiku onegai shimasu. Ima wa Steven Naomi no radio banzumi wo kikimasu. Yoshiku ne. There we go.
That's so cool! The little things of music.
That was awesome.
And now your Japanese listening audience will just kick up for one episode. They're like, what? Yeah.
What'd she say? My pencil is red.
A big hello to Henry, who's in the chat room and listening.
Yes.
Who is your co-host. Well, not, well, yeah, yep. One of the co-hosts from The Paranormal View.
Paranormal
we had the honor of
awesome.
Meeting Henry, really, really nice man. Definitely
mm-hmm.
enjoyed talking to both of you. So
yep.
when you were in Japan, did you do any
mm-hmm.
investigations there?
I didn't do any formal investigations, and that is because of a small culture difference with how they perceive ghosts. And There are tours you can do in Tokyo, only in Tokyo, that you can go paranormal investigating with a guide. And it's an American girl. I've forgotten her name at the moment. I have her web address somewhere. But she'll take you to a lot of the notoriously haunted places around Tokyo. And the interesting thing is, it's not necessarily cemeteries. That's what I think here in America, we think first, oh, yeah, the cemetery is going to be haunted. But in Japan, it tends to be hotels because
really?
That's where people commit suicide, and especially Disneyland. And I have been
wow.
to Tokyo Disneyland, but I didn't do any investigating there. But instead, I rode Space Mountain like 15 times in a row. But, yeah, that one, you do have people that go sign into the hotel for one night and then commit suicide there because they want to die on the happiest place on Earth. So Tokyo Disneyland is said to be very haunted. The most notable one is a little girl, for some reason, in the front lobby of the main hotel. People will go up to her, say, like, where are your parents? And she'll just fade away. I have been to the Aokigahara, which is known as the Sea of Trees. It's at the base of Mount Fuji. And that is known as the Suicide Forest. And I know Destination Truth did an episode there and caught what they think was a ghost on camera a few years ago. That place is straight up one of the freakiest places I've ever been that is just naturally creepy looking. It's you walk in, actually, they generally don't want you to stop driving through the Sea of Trees. They want you to go from the small little Lakeport City where you start and you just drive up a rail the street up to the first post on Mount Fuji. And when you're driving through Aokigahara, they have grooved the pavement to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star to distract you from the fact that you're driving through the suicide forest. And every year they take 200 to 300 bodies out of this forest. Because of the volcanic rock, your compasses do not work. Your cell phones
wow.
do not work. There are more bodies than that, they think, that go there, but that's as many as they usually find. And people will go camp out, write a suicide note, leave their campsite, and usually hang themselves from one of the pine trees. And their pine trees that grow there grow straight up and very densely. So even in the middle of the day, I went there in October of 2010. I walked, I very, very nicely and continuously nagged, unfortunately, the man who was driving me to stop so I can visit to see what the place is like. He didn't like that. He was like, but he did stop the car, and I got to walk through. I only went about 5 feet in, but it is in the middle of the day when we were there, bright sunny day, very few clouds in the sky. You walk into the forest, and it becomes nighttime. It's just so dense with pine needles. And you get lost very quickly. So I made sure I didn't go very far. I could see the edge. Whoa, that was not a ghost. That was my dog hacking up something in the background. Live radio, everyone.
Wow, that place sounds amazing.
I actually went on and Googled the Sea of Trees, and I'm looking at some of the pictures. That is crazy dense.
Looks crazy.
Yeah,
definitely.
It is.
I've never heard of it, but
remember.
I was going to say, I've never heard of the Sea of Trees until this conversation, but I have heard of the road that does Twinkle Twinkle, or, yeah, that's what it does, right? That they put the grooves in. I've wanted to find that. I actually thought it was in the States. Because you got to go at a certain speed to get the tune to play, but
you have to go about 30 miles per hour or so. I've also been to Kojimbo, which is actually on the Sea of Japan side, so it's the northern side of the main island, and this is cliffs that just at a 90-degree angle drop into the Sea of Japan, and I did not realize at the time, this was 2004, that this was a very popular place for people to commit suicide, and it's a sightseeing destination just generally. But people will just do running jumps off the cliffs and just drown in the ocean, well, the Sea of Japan. And there are numerous video, actually, of just tourists just taking photos or taking video of the waves, and they'll see shadow people apport, run, and then jump off the cliffs. And it's just crazy. Around August, that's the time of ghosts. In Japan, China, and South Korea, they have the Obon Festival, which is literally a festival to summon the dead to the living world for 3 days, and then they send them back to the afterlife either with candles or burning balsa wood. But during that time, you tell ghost stories. So on TV, you'll see a whole bunch of like ghost story TV shows, a lot of, like ghost, not ghost hunters, but travel shows where people will try to go visit these places. Psychics and mediums will be interviewed on TV, but this is really the only time of year that you ever see those people on TV.
It sounds like people aren't happy there.
They are. It's very stressful living in Japan. Just the what society demands of each individual person is sometimes very stressful. And not everyone can always handle the amount of schoolwork or coursework or how life has turned out. So I've actually witnessed somebody jump off a platform for the subway and hit the car. And I watched her hit the car because I was in the front car looking out where the captain was driving the train. And that was messy. And I'm very glad that I'm an anthropologist and in some weird way can compartmentalize seeing that and just think of it more as a physical thing and not that a woman had just committed suicide in front of me. So that is, it's weird, but that's what I had to do. And I had to explain to some poor French tourists why the train had stopped because they couldn't understand why the train had stopped.
Wow.
How odd. Well, I'm glad you made it back to the United States.
Well, I had a very good experience. All my experiences in Japan, although sometimes were very strange, were very positive, and I really love the country, and we'll probably be going back sometime soon.
You know, you and I talked about, you know, you had mentioned to me when we met about how you had lived there and been there, and I would love to just go there, visit, check out all of the amazing places there and just experience it. Especially, I mean, as spooky as those trees look, that place looks awesome.
You want to go camping?
Go camping. I don't think I want to go camping there. The Sea of Trees.
There's a lot of tourist resorts along the base of Mount Fuji, so you'll be okay. And I'm going to play tour guide for the moment and say the Olympics will be in Tokyo in 2020, and that is a perfect time for foreigners to go visit.
There you go.
Yeah. I know Mike is my husband. Mike and I are planning on going. So
that was a good plug for the 2020 Olympics.
Yeah. They should appreciate that.
Yes.
So explain to us where you came up with Vegapunk.
Okay. So, yeah, in the chat room right now, I'm Vegapunk Prime, and also my Twitter is at Vegapunk Prime. Okay. To explain it, I will expose my very nerdy side and say I'm a huge comic book and manga lover, and one of my favorite series is a series known as One Piece, which has been going on for 15 years. It's drawn by Eiichiro Oda, who is a Japanese man, and it is currently in Weekly Shonen Jump, and it is the world's most popular comic, I believe, as right now as I speak. And let's see, it's about a pirate crew that go around the world and have adventures. But one of the mysterious characters that is in the One Piece universe is Dr. Vegapunk. And I just particularly like the name, so as my comic book pen name, I took Vegapunk. And I have Vegapunk Prime because on Twitter and on here, because somebody else took just Vegapunk before I could. I also like stars and astronomy, and Vega is just a very popular star that you can see from planet Earth with the naked eye. So there you go. That's why.
Wow. Now, you are one of many, many, many things, which which doing research and, of course, talking with you.
I was amazed.
Yeah. You're a very well-rounded person.
Heart of gold.
You have written the book Haunted Hoosier Halls.
Hoosier Halls. Sorry.
He keeps saying that.
I love it. It just goes so well.
Anyways, these are your stories about Indiana University. You went there. I believe you got two bachelors while attending there. And it's, let's see, you describe it as a timeless campus ghost such as the girl in yellow of Red Hall who stumbles about looking for her sliced away face. I think you need to tell us that story.
Have you ever actually seen
it? Yes, the girl of Reed Hall. This is not a story for the kids, let me say that.
Lock the kids' ears.
Yeah. Put your hands over the children's ears. Lock them away from the computer. Distract them somehow. The girl in the yellow dress at Reed Hall is probably one of the top 10 ghost stories that every student and alumni who has gone to Indiana University Bloomington knows. And actually, it's pretty well known around the state, even to people who haven't gone to the campus, as well as Stepp Cemetery. Basically, to run down the story, back in the 60s, I didn't really reread my story here, I'm going to be honest. the actual building, Reed Hall, was built in 1955, and it is for those who do not know, the dormitory is shaped like an X. If you were to fly overhead, it makes an X. And two wings are for men and two wings are for women. And the strange thing they do is they alternate every few years. So women's wings will have urinals. They usually plant flowers in them. And the men's wings will just have normal toilets. But the strange thing is that one of the very old men's wings has a ghost in it. And like I said, sometimes the girls get this ghost too. And this is the girl in the yellow dress. And this is a ghost people have seen. They have encountered her. And basically, the story goes like this. Back in the early 50s, there was a young surgeon, because IU is a medical school, and his co-ed girlfriend. and they very much loved each other, but they were also very volatile as a couple. They were hot-headed, and they got into fights very, very easily. And they were going to a dance that was at Reed Hall, because there are large community rooms. At some point, they got into an argument, stormed out of the dance. The girl was wearing the yellow dress. They got into an argument. They went to his dorm room on the third floor of Reed Hall, and he proceeded to close the door. And what happened next, no one really knows, but we know the outcome. He killed his girlfriend, we don't know how, and using his surgical tools, began to peel her face off of her skull.
Oh.
He then stuffed the flesh into his sock drawer, and then somehow managed to take her body down four flights of stairs to the laundry room area and then toss it into one of the utility tunnels that runs underneath the campus. She was not missed very long. Her friends immediately knew that she was gone. There was a campus-wide search. The police found the face in his sock drawer and found her body. I guess he led the police to the body and was quickly arrested and taken to Central State Insane Asylum, that is in Indianapolis, after being found guilty of murdering his girlfriend. It's a very chilling story. And people have seen on the third floor, and this is the interesting part, on different wings of the different third floor wings, seeing a girl in a yellow dress floating down the hallway, and sometimes they say she doesn't have a face. A lot of times the hair is just covering over her face and they wouldn't be able to see it, kind of a la The Ring or a lot of those Japanese horror films.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting point, though, to this story is that it's complete urban legend. It never happened, but people still see this ghost, which I find intriguing. People do have quite often audio equipment, the radio, the computers will go on and off on their own. I know back in the 70s there were accounts of somebody's huge boombox stereo tuning up so loud that it was making everyone's ears bleed. People have had cold spots, have been touched, hear voices that are not of students. My friends who have lived on the sixth floor of the dormitory have actually seen a shadow person pacing in their bathroom.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And for the people in the chat room, the girl in the yellow dress is an actual urban legend. We didn't have anyone murdered on campus until 1992. So she's complete fabrication. The fascinating thing about this ghost is even though she is urban legend, people claim to see her. Kind of like with Slenderman. Slenderman is complete urban legend. He does not exist. We have a paper trail of this character being created in internet forums. But the funny thing is, I get emails from people, and other people have gotten emails, saying, I have seen this Slenderman. It's a tall man with no face, wearing a black suit, white shirt, and black tie, and he has multiple arms. He stands at about 8 feet tall and is incredibly thin, almost paper thin. People have seen this creature. They can't have seen this creature. He doesn't exist. But then again, if the paranormal, can he? Because if we think about it and create him, it's like a tulpa. He can suddenly come into existence in our world. So it's an interesting study in folklore.
I would love for you to tell the people about the story you told me when you were sitting at the bus stop.
The one late at night with, like, one of my ghost encounters on campus?
Yeah,
okay. So I used to live in University Apartments West, which no longer exist. They were torn down last year. But it's on the corner of 3rd Street and Jordan Avenue. And across the street from it, at least when I was in college, there was a convenience store. And it was open 24 hours. One night around 3 a.m., I was still studying for finals, and I think it was my senior year, and I went across the street just one to get out of my apartment because I had been stuck reading books and case studies all night, and just to get a good walk around. And IDU's campus really never shuts down. There's always somebody outside. And there was a Chinese couple who was, I could understand Chinese a little bit, so that's how I knew they were Chinese, just standing with me, and we were waiting for the crosswalk sign to change, because I do not dare walk on 3rd Street without the light, because people will be jumping. It never stops. The traffic never stops. As I'm waiting, I'm looking south at the convenience store, which has a very well-lit parking lot. And across the street from that is Sorority Row. So to my right is Sorority Row. And I'm just looking around, waiting for the light to turn, and I suddenly see this pair of legs appear. Just legs. Just from the belt down, legs. It was very strange. Just kind of these jeans that were kind of punkish. You could see what looked like to be an old hardware belt. Hardware being the black leather belt with studs in them. And then they were wearing the slip-on Vans shoes that were checkered colored, black and white. And I watched this pair of hips and legs and feet cross across Jordan Avenue, across the street, but towards us. And as it hit the crossing area where the light would be, it just disappeared. And I'm watching this, and the Chinese couple, who is also looking around, never said anything about that. They didn't mention it to each other. It's like they didn't even see it. And I'm just like, huh, okay. I'm going to go get myself a dilly bar now. Because I've seen ghosts since I was really little. So that is actually not the strangest thing I've ever encountered.
What is
that? That was really strange. I think
we'd
other people would be
know.
Running the other direction.
Well, first of all, I wonder if maybe that was a student that got hit by a car there, and it was kind of a recurring thing going on.
And
you know what I mean?
Very possible, because just a few days after that, there was a fatal car accident between a taxi and a Jeep Cherokee that killed both students. That particular intersection is very dangerous, and the new problem is students who have their headsets in, like listening to their iPods or cell phones, whatever, and not paying attention. And recently accidents, like vehicle and pedestrian accidents, have gone up so much with that. But 3rd Street is also very haunted. It has a lot of old mansions turned sorority houses, and we have the Lady in Black that has been seen drifting down that street since 1911. So, and she chases people.
Chases people?
Yeah. She chases people. This is another really well-known ghost story on campus is the Lady in Black, who she seems to be wearing, I'm going to call Edwardian or late Victorian era clothing, being that the bustle is in the back. It's not a very big dress, not like the huge hoop skirts that you think of from like the Civil War era. It's much smaller than that, but very frilly. And she also carries a parasol and wears a hat that covers her face, basically. It's like a morning outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been seen since 1911 drifting, just floating down the street. And she's also been seen in the Old Crescent, which is the area where all of our old historical buildings are that were the, well, not quite original, but all Sierra 1860, the original buildings. And she's been seen around there. And popular belief is that she was the wife of maybe a professor that worked at the university and just marches on like a funeral march.
I wonder why she's chasing after
people.
Yeah, I wonder why.
She's after fraternity boys. And she has been seen. Yeah, this is the interesting point. She was actually seen in a women's league party back in the 19-teens. And she appeared in front of a few people in the middle of a party, a Halloween party, saying that she would haunt. Maybe they were doing a seance, now that I think about it. Hopefully the time period. She claimed that she would continue to haunt Indiana University every Halloween. And for another 10 years, there were eyewitness accounts of seeing her. in 1921, there was a mentally unstable woman who was caught. She was wearing all black, and the skeptics and the cynics thought, oh, well, we finally caught Our Lady in Black. It's this mentally unstable woman. The problem was that even though the woman was in jail, people still saw the ghost. And then the skeptics were like, oh, we don't know what to make of that. So.
Oh, my. Okay, so you mentioned that...
That wasn't your most disturbing story.
Yes, we'd love to hear your most disturbing story.
We like disturbing.
Okay. Yeah.
Everyone is going to double think or think twice driving at night after I finish this story. And this one happened when I was in high school. So where I grew up is a little town called Mishawaka, Indiana. And I was driving at night. There is actually a large Native American population, especially in the area where I grew up, and mostly Potawatomi. But we do have burial sites, and I'm not going to go to Indian burial ground area, but they are known, ghosts of Potawatomi are said to haunt a lot of northern Indiana, especially Notre Dame University, but which is not too far away from where I grew up. So we have ghosts of Potawatomi, ghosts of pioneer settlers. One of them decided to follow me one night. I was driving home from one of my friend's house, probably around 9 o'clock at night, and it was fall time, and I have my old 1989 Chevy Cavalier going down the street, and I looked in my rearview mirror, and there was a floating purple head chasing my car.
Really?
A floating purple head.
Purple.
Floating behind my car.
Oh,
and
man.
The thing, yeah, that is it. I'm driving there, little teenage me, going, what am I seeing? And my car, it was an old car by that time, and it's going away at like 30 miles per hour. And I'm like, what? That is so bizarre. And I learned later that in, I think it's Valparaiso, Indiana, there is a bridge called Purplehead Bridge. And
oh,
there was a Native American, and they're not close to me, but maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours away. But there was a Native American chief who was killed and decapitated in this particular creek that this bridge spans at apparently the point where the bridge crosses. And it was a settler and Native American fight, and his head went missing, but they recovered the body. So his tribe buried the body, but his soul is said to constantly look for his head. So when people cross the bridge sometimes at night, they may have this man's head follow them, or if you look down into the water, you'll see it come out of the water and at you. So it's not exactly an unheard-of phenomena in northern Indiana to have purple disembodied heads float at you.
I don't know. That would be like, yeah, that would freak me out.
I think I'd have to stop the car and get out and see if it's actually there.
I think I'd drive a little faster.
All I can do is turn around and be like, you're not following me home, and just continued on. That's actually what I did. But I grew up in a very haunted house, so run-ins with the afterlife are not something I'm necessarily unfamiliar with.
And that started at a really young age, right?
Yeah, I was 9 when I saw my first ghost. And I'm not into, like, horror movies. Like, people that I speak to, they're like, hey, you must really love horror movies and just be really prone to this. And I'm like, no, I don't watch horror movies. Those things freak me out. I didn't touch anything like that until I was easily in high school. And I still don't like horror movies too much, not slasher movies especially. But I saw what turned out to be the ghost of my grandfather. And when I saw him, he wasn't my grandfather, but I got the impression he was, if you can understand where I'm going.
Yeah.
What I saw was a blue shadow person, if that makes sense, glowing blue humanoid figure, walk up the stairs from the first floor of my parents' house. It turned right, walked past me, and into the linen closet. And the impression that I got was that it was a man, and it was really tall. Everything's taller than me. But I immediately went, how did he fit into the linen closet? Not even question the fact that he didn't open the door into the linen closet, but I opened the door and started trying to figure out how he fit in there with all the shelving and the towels and other linens that were stored in there. Because the linen closet was only 2 feet wide and 1 foot deep. And he would not have fit in there because they're shelves. That's what I did. I woke up my mom. And the next day I described what the man looked like, and it fit my grandfather to a T with the big ears and the freckles. And he had this gigantic... He looks a lot like Hugh Laurie, if you know him. He was the doctor on House. And he has that kind of huge, long face with the crazy eyes and the big smile. That was what my grandfather looked like. And I described him to my mom, and she about broke the plate she was drawing at the time. And she was towel drawing the plate. So, yeah.
Wow.
And one of my friends told my grandmother, my deceased grandmother, not my living one, she was in the bedroom during the sleepover. None of my friends stayed at my house after that for a sleepover. that was in high school, or not high school, middle school. She woke up in the middle of the night to see a old woman looking over her, just standing over her looking down, and it freaked her out. She screamed and woke all of us up, and we're like, what's going on? And she's like, there was a woman in the room, and we're like, And when she described her, it fit my grandmother that's passed on.
Wow.
She was like,
now, with all these stories, it's a little odd to see that you describe yourself as a skeptic to the paranormal.
Yes. Yes. Well, a skeptic isn't necessarily somebody who outright doesn't believe in paranormal things. It just means we question sometimes how people saw these things and what goes on. Cynics are the ones that are absolutely like, no, you cannot have possibly seen the paranormal because it does not exist. So as an anthropologist and a cultural anthropologist, I look into people's reports of the paranormal, and when I see patterns, when people have seen the same thing or experienced the same thing, but they haven't spoken to one another, I find that very compelling to the idea of an afterlife. So with the case of Step Cemetery, when I did that, I found out what many of the ghost hunting teams had encountered, and they didn't speak to one another about their findings, because that's how apparently we roll in the paranormal. they found the same thing. They encountered the same pattern, but they didn't know it, and it wasn't revealed until the book came out that, hey, something completely different haunts the cemetery than what everyone thinks haunts the cemetery. So that's where it comes. It's a very tricky position to come from, because it's like, wait, you've seen Ghost Cat. Some people believe I'm a medium, and yet I sit there and analyze all these ghost stories and have called foul on a few of them. So it's a tricky position, but I think it's a fairly healthy one to look at things with the question of why is this happening and who is it happening to.
Right. You definitely have to have a questioning type of open mind in this field. And I've always said, you know, if you're in this field and you're saying, well, this is the way it is and it can't be any other way, I mean, that's not the way to go into it, in my opinion. So.
No.
Now,
I remind people, we don't know completely what goes into our brain chemistry yet. Neuroscientists have not figured out why we even sleep. They can't even give us an answer to that. And we don't know what exactly our universe is completely made out of. I mean, scientists, physicists can't figure out if our universe is expanding or contracting. So if we can't even answer what's going on in our own physical mind and what's going on in outer space, you can't just write off the paranormal as something that doesn't exist. It could be physics. As I like to say, we're doing the field work for universal field theory, because we could be proving dark matter, we could be proving alternate dimensions with our field work, but unfortunately not all physicists want to take in our field work information to help with their own case studies.
Right. Mm.
Now,
well, I can answer the question on why we sleep, because I am tired.
Yeah, I'm so tired today. I could not stay awake.
I ate a whole bunch
yet.
Of turkeys.
Right?
It's so funny. I know this is off subject, but my coworker, it's so funny. I was just so exhausted today, and I'm at work, and I'm like, you know, typing away, doing what I need to do. And I kept falling asleep. And about 2 hours later, one of my coworker comes up to me, and she whispers, "I saw you snoozing." I
is that why
she goes, but I didn't tell anybody.
Is that why when you texted me, it was... Yeah,
that's
it.
Yeah.
Anyway. I never got that.
Now, Henry said that you thought that the place that you guys were at 2 weeks ago made you more uneasy than Pennhurst, which was more...
Oh, yeah. I did state that. So, for your listeners, I am the co-host of the Paranormal View radio show, which can be listened to every Saturday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on para-x.com. And 2 weeks ago, we were at Harmon Hall doing a live radio show, which is what Henry and I like to do, is go to paranormal locations and do radio shows. And we get a lot of EVP and stuff usually when we do live shows from locations. But afterwards, we got the opportunity to actually do a casual investigation, I guess, a ghost hunt in this Harmon Hall, which is now the Warren County Historical Society Museum. And there was a lot of Shakers that lived in Warren County, and we have a lot of their artifacts on display there. And we were in what was known as the Cow Room. And Vicki, who is the director of the Historical Museum, was telling us that lots of people get different sensations in the Cow Room. It is, and you can see photos on my website at catcloco.com. I took lots of photos. But the hallmark of this room are two life-size, I believe they're porcelain-painted cows. One of them's missing an eye. So if you look at the statue, you look right into the molding of it. But it's really freaky. And at the very end of the room, there's actually a statue of an artist's interpretation of Lucifer as a fallen angel. And there's also another statue next to it of a soul transcending out of the human body into angelic form. But that's not what freaked me out, because I've seen plenty of occult statues and stuff with field work and whatnot. The room felt incredibly uneasy. And when myself and another an actual ghost hunter with a different paranormal investigating team, he was our guide, basically, we went into the room and we could smell cigarette smoke. Now, I'm very allergic to cigarette smoke. My nose is just pings on it very quickly, because then I just usually leave. But no one was smoking. You're not allowed to smoke in the museum, and you're not allowed to smoke directly outside of it. And I know after asking people, no one had done a smoking break around that time, not 15 minutes before or 20 minutes before. So the guide and I walk in, we can smell the smoke, we go into the next adjoining room, it's actually a hallway, there was no smoke. Same ductwork system, but no smoke. We go back into the room, we can smell the smoke. We leave the room, no smoke. Then we come back into it again, and it's fine. It smells like musty museum.
Hmm.
Now, this room is filled with artifacts from old farms. So you have scythes, you have old wagons, you have all sorts of old 19th century farming equipment before everything was mechanized. So you have hand saws and axes and all sorts of lovely things people can kill themselves with.
Hmm.
And as we're walking down, Henry is in front of me, and I suddenly get the chills. And you know the chills. You're just staying there just fine, and suddenly it feels like cold, clammy death has come around you, and your goosebumps just prickle up, and you know something is there. And I was taking photos, and I have a Canon EOS P3, and I'm taking photos, and there is a dark, shadowy thing that is taking up, like, a black mist, the left side of one of my photos in the cow room. At the exact same time, I felt horribly uneasy. I never felt that way when I was at Pennhurst, even with a shadow person just running at us in the third floor of Mayflower. That didn't freak me out, but just walking through this cow room, it was so uneasy, like something was trying to intimidate you out of the room. And then also Henry saw a shadow person walk out of that same room up a staircase.
Wow.
That same night. Yes. So it was very active, and we've only investigated the basement. This room was in the basement. We didn't have an opportunity to investigate the other two floors that were above it because of time constraint.
Wow. Sounds like a cool place to go.
It was very cool. It was very nice. And there is a sister museum that is an old 19th century mansion. So that I also hear is very haunted.
Now, we heard about your haunted Hoosier Halls and some
Hoosier
of the
Halls.
Oh my gosh, you're killing me. But you have another book coming out soon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do. This year? In
Halloween?
The fall?
Next year.
Next year?
Next year.
Okay.
Spring
Which
of
I believe
2015.
Ohio's Haunted Crime?
Yeah. Ohio's Haunted Crime. Oh, man, this book is so much fun to write. I'm enjoying it immensely. It's also horribly macabre, but I still love it.
Okay, so we'll have to look forward to it then and maybe have you back on and you can promote that book and it's
mm-hmm.
coming out. But currently you
yeah.
can get Haunted Hoosier Halls.
She won't let me say it.
I believe you can get it on Amazon and also Barnes & Noble.
What's that book? Who's y'all?
She's going to go to bed with your voice back. Can you
say yeah.
that? And one thing I want to talk about real quick, we're actually getting low on time, but something we found out about you, which we thought was very, very, very cool.
Heart of gold, like I said earlier.
Yeah, definitely a heart of gold. I can't find it. It's the dragonfly.
Oh, yes. I actually do charity artwork for two different groups. The first is the Dragonfly Foundation. I visit kids who have cancer or blood diseases. I either visit them at The Landing, which is a out-of-hospital location where families can visit and kids who are well enough to leave the hospital but still have to undergo chemotherapy. We do art things there. Also, I have visited in the past the actual Cincinnati Children's Hospital Cancer Wing, and I spend time with kids who actually live at the hospital because they're too sick to be able to leave. And what I do is just draw with them or draw them illustrations to decorate their hospital room. The other charity I have worked with is the Ishinomaki Playground Project. And Ishinomaki is a city in the Tohoku region of Japan. And they were one of the hardest hit cities from the tsunami and earthquake of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
They still have about 3,000 people unaccounted for. Most of them are students.
Wow.
The tsunami took out their entire town. And what I do is help just fundraise, not necessarily always through art, but just with their events. We are building, actually, as of 8 days from now, we are building them a brand new multi-generational playground in Ishinomaki.
Wow. That's and awesome.
So, yeah.
You're a good woman.
I'm very happy. Yeah. So I'm very happy. I'm sad I wasn't able to go help them, but I'm very happy to see that this playground's being built. And they're still actually requesting, we're still looking for donations because we would like to be able to add on to this playground area. We're putting up the actual playground now, but we would like to put up a exercise area for the elderly so they can do some exercises outside and be able to walk around and put park benches up.
Now, if somebody wanted to give a donation, where would they be able to do that?
Okay. I don't have this pulled up.
I know, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Ishinomaki. So it will be at i-playground.org. www.i-playground.org.
Awesome. And do you want to kind of, before we have to go, kind of tell everybody, you know, where they can find you, and you have your comics as well, and real quick, how they may look you up, all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, the easiest way to find me, I have two different websites, www.katklokow.com, KATKLOCKOW.com. That is my paranormal author website. I also have huntforghosts.com, and it's just hunt for ghosts, completely written out with no spaces, .com. And that's actually my graphic novel website. And you can find my convention schedules on both websites. My graphic novel is Miss Gray. It's a supernatural adventure comic about a Grim Reaper and her adventures globetrotting, quelling monsters and demons. And it is now available on Smashwords for digital download. And
awesome.
See where it went. It's 99 cents an issue.
Wow.
Oh, and you can also find me on The Paranormal View every Saturday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on
Tara-X.com. Which is a very cool show. We
awesome
were guests
show
on it, and we had such
yes,
a fun time with all
yes
four of you. It was great.
Yes.
Yeah. Those guys got to check
we're
that
like
out
the,
for sure.
Yeah. We're like The View, but paranormal themes. And this week we have Thomas Freese talking about ghost stories. He should be really interesting.
Well, Kat, I want to thank you for joining us. We had a great time with you
mm-hmm
when we met you, and we'll definitely keep in touch, and you'll have to come on when you get that other book finished and ready to show the world, and
mm-hmm
we can share that.
Yes, gladly.
And feel free to post that website for the donations for that playground on our Facebook so that people can get to that link and donate to it.
It's definitely a good cause.
Yeah, we love that. That's awesome. Well, thank you for joining us, Kat. And
thank
hope you.
You
have a fabulous week. And
we love you, Kat.
Thank
yeah
you. Thank you, guys.
And Henry,
thank
I know you're listening. We love you, too.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye, Kat.
Love her. She's so much fun to be around. Anyways, just to close things up, the Bruins are unfortunately losing at this moment, but they'll pull it off.
They're a third-quarter team.
Yep,
they're
definitely a third-quarter team. Next week, we have from Ghost Hunters Academy, the very unique Jane Riley coming on.
That's
I cannot
talk to her last weekend.
Yeah. Can't wait to have her on. This girl is definitely talented in many other ways as well. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening tonight.
All the people in the chat room.
Yep.
What's up?
All our buddies in the chat room. Big hello to Henry as well.
Thank you to Kat and Henry one more time.
Henry is from the Paranormal View as well. Very nice man. And I want to wish everybody a good night. And thanks for listening.
Be safe. See ya.
Make good choices.
Dreams Cove Magazine is a proud sponsor of DTMWickedRadio.com. In Dreams Cove Magazine, you can learn all about ghosts, orbs, sleep paralysis, and more. Go to www.dreamcodesmagazine.com to order a subscription and learn more. The historical Fort William Henry Conference Center and Resort is a proud sponsor of DTM Wicked Radio. If you're looking for a relaxing getaway, the historical Fort William Henry Resort and Conference Center is your destination. Come enjoy the beautiful mountains, the gorgeous lake, and everything Lake George has to offer in upstate New York right off the Adirondack Mountains. For reservations, you can go to www.fortwilliamhenry.com or call 1-800-234-0267. The Fort William Henry Resort and Conference Center is your destination for the perfect getaway.